हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. Okay, now studying from learned Brahmins. Let the king, after rising early in the morning, worship Brahmins who are well versed in the threefold sacred science and learned in polity and follow their advice. Right? So in other words, they know the Vedas. But at the same time, they also are learned in the Dharma Shastra. You know, Dharma Artha and Dharma Artha Niti Shastras. So then they can give advice on how to apply the aspects of the Vedic literatures into administration, right? So that kind of Brahmin. These other Brahmins you may take advice from for personal development, spiritual development, like that, but specifically in connection with the running of the kingdom, then he has to have Brahmins that also know the field. Like that. So we see here, so he's getting up early in the morning, and he's respecting the Brahmins. Otherwise, if he doesn't, he can't actually be a good king, like I said before, who doesn't have any assistants. Of punishment cannot be inflicted justly by one who has no assistant, nor by a fool, means a prime minister, so that means also a Brahmin. Nor by a fool, nor by a covetous man, nor by one whose mind is unimproved, nor one addicted to sensual pleasures. Right? And by him who is pure and faithful to his promise, who acts according to the institutes of the sacred law, and who has good assistance and is wise, punishment can be justly inflicted. So in other words, he has to be studied, he has to be practiced, and he has to have advice of senior Brahmins. Then he can properly guide the king and he can properly inflict punishment. Right? So it's not because he's in charge, that's why he's giving punishment. No, that's a duty. It's because, but he can only perform that duty if he has this particular character. Let him daily worship aged Brahmins who know the Veda and are pure. For he who always worships aged men is honored even by Rakshasas. So aged here means they have experience. But also more important with Brahmins is they have knowledge, right? Because for Brahmins it's not age, right? For Brahmins then it is their knowledge, their understanding. That's more important. Let him, yes. But aged also can mean they have practice in applying it, right? But they have to have knowledge, yes.
So about rising early in the morning, it is called every varna?
Every varna means Brahmin Kshatriyas are supposed to get up early in the morning, like that. If Vaishyas and Shudras do it, it's good. They'll benefit. Does that make sense? So the idea is that it's for everybody. But for devotees, because they're all living the lifestyle of Brahmin, therefore they all get up. It doesn't matter what their varna is. Right? Because the varna is your social standing. Ashram is your spiritual standing. So in the Brahminical ashram, then one gets up early. Right? So Brahmins follow the Brahminical ashram. Kshatriyas follow the Brahminical ashram. Right? Vaishyas, Shudras should follow, but if they do, nice. If they don't, it's not the end of the world. Right? Because their duties, Vaishyas and Shudras, their duties don't depends so much on good character, but on skill. Right? That's why in the modern age, that one looks at it, well, what skills have you gained from school, not what character and what you've gained from school. Right? Because it's all about varna, it's not about ashram. See, Brahmins and Kshatriyas, the ashram is the more prominent element. Right? Then, because of that, then they can perform their duties nicely. Because to be able to teach, to be able to do the yajnas and the sacrifices and these other things for others, and be able to afford the astrological, Ayurvedic and other things to the public for minimal, basically no charge, and it's just whatever dakshin they give, you would have to have high character to be able to do that. At the same time, the Kshatriya, though very developed to their duties, you have to have character to be able to apply it. But you can be a damn good businessman and be the worst character in the world. Right? Because it's simply a skill. It doesn't require character. Now, for him to, take care of his dependents, to give in charity and all that, that would require some character. So the more character he has, the more he'll do that. Generally speaking, the more wealthy they'll be. So in the Vedic time, generally speaking, your more wealthy, most of the time, had more character. But sometimes the top end of that would become proud. So Prabhupada said if you went into a new town and you were looking for a place to stay and all that, then you find out who are the, who's the richest man. Like, who's the richest man? Because everybody will say, leave him. Who's the second richest? Leave him. Who's the third richest? Go to his house. Because the first two will be proud. Like that, So you do have a little bit.
People like Donald Trump, they all wake up at like 4 or 5 a.m., like the successful Vaishnavas.
They all get up early. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The point is even in business, if you want to be successful, you have to have character, you have to have regularity, you have to give in charity. Like that.
You also say you have to get up pretty early in the morning to freak that guy or to beat that guy or something.
Yeah, because he's already up freaking out something. Because the point is the market, everything's... Nowadays the market runs 24 hours. Mm. The stock market, you can trade all night. You can trade over the weekend. So they get up, they lead a regulated life. All the different things that are necessary, they do because they're more pious. That's why they live that lifestyle. Though they themselves, their purpose is not necessarily the mode of goodness, but actually if you want to be successful in these higher areas of education, administration, economics, you actually have to follow a mode of goodness lifestyle. That's the fun part. You have to have sense control. You have to have regularity. You have to have respect. So you have to, all these different things. So that's what I'm saying. If they do it, then they'll prosper very nice. If they don't, they'll get by. They'll make their money because they know the skill. But the Kshatriya, if he's not running on this, there's no such thing as just getting by as an administrator. It has to be up to standard. Because below standard, it makes trouble. Because the other thing, he's making money, and he'll spend it on himself and his family and this and that. No one's going to complain. But if the administrator does that exclusively, and does because protection means character. Like that. Okay, so aged here means knowledgeable and also practiced. Right, so they've practiced applying. So either they have good insight, even though they're very young, or they've been doing it for some time, and so they have very good insight. So either way is that they have the knowledge and they know how to practically apply it. One has to take advice and direction from such persons if one wants to be a successful administrator. It's not a matter of if you do, it's nice. You know, if you don't, it's not going to happen. Let him, though he may be already modest, constantly learn modesty from them. For a king who is modest never perishes. Right? It doesn't mean he's not powerful. He's just modest. He doesn't have to, say I'm the big guy and strut around. It's when you're going out and looking at the troops, then you wear a bit of an outfit and you march around a bit. Because they expect it. They're doing it, you're doing it. It's all part of the bhav. But in dealing with others, personally, then modesty is important. Through a want of modesty, many kings have perished, together with their belongings. Through modesty, even hermits in the forest have gained kingdoms. Right? So you have so many stories of kings who they something in the family, you know, some brother or uncle or something, you know, comes in, takes over, and you end up out in the forest. So the prince is, you know, and his father, they're living as hermits in the forest. But because of the modesty and the worship of the Brahmins, like your Pandavas, they're an example, then they've gained kingdoms. Right? And those who lack of it, then they lose it, together with their belongings, you know, the Duryodhanadis. Right? They lose everything. So like this, there's so many examples. Through a want of humility, Vena perished. Likewise, King Nahusha, Sudas, the son of Pingavana, Sumuka, and Nemi. But by humility, Prithu and Manu gained sovereignty. Kuvera, the position of the Lord of Wealth, and the son of Gadhi, Vishwamitra, the rank of a Brahmin. Right, so it's pointing out is that here is that we've established that punishment is has to be used, but you have to have the proper character, right? And now the further step in how do you gain that character? You gain it from worship of the Brahmins, by hearing from them, learning from them. It's not that, yeah, I learned it, now I'm the king. No, as a king, he's still every day learning. Because ashram is always developing. Right? His skills as a kshatriya are supposed to develop, but him as a person is supposed to develop. So if he's not personally developing, you know what I'm saying? The identity is not a kshatriya. That's your occupation. Right? Your identity is as the soul servant of God. That's ashram. Does that make sense? But it's varnashram system is so perfect, varna can be engaged in the Lord's service. So you can also advance by varna. But it's not the direct method. Ashrams are direct. Does that make sense? Because all your sadhana and other things are in ashram. Okay. From those versed in the three Vedas, let him learn the threefold sacred science. Right? So again, back to those versed in the three Vedas. Right? Threefold sacred science. The primeval science of government, the science of dialectics, and the knowledge of the Supreme Soul. From the people, the theory of the Vedas, various trades and professions. Right? So from the Brahmins, you're supposed to learn the science of government, the science of dialectics, means, you know, logic and everything, how to properly think. Otherwise, you'll just sentimentally do things, but just logically going through things. And the knowledge of the soul. In other words, you have to learn Vedanta, you have to learn logic, so anvikshiki, and governance. Right? So in other words, what means anvikshiki is your basic, that's your paravidya. You're learning transcendental knowledge along with logic. So you're logically studying it and learning how to apply it logically. Then you'll think properly. Then, and the science of government. That's what you learn from the Brahmins, right? That's what you learn from the academy. It says, from the people, you learn the various trades and professions. You don't go to the academy to learn trades and professions. Maybe a Shudra does, but no, he just goes to other people. People who do it are the ones that should teach you. Otherwise, the guy who's teaching you doesn't know it, right? You go, means the point is you go to the school, you do an MBA, right? So you're learning business, right? Then after that, you can be hired by a businessman. You can't go out and start a business. Why not? Because you'd have to learn business from a businessman, not from a guy who doesn't do business. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. You're learning medicine from a doctor. You learn law from lawyers. Right? Does that make sense? But these other things you learn by people who don't do it. You know what I'm saying? If you're learning, let's say, you know, how you say, what do you call it? Literature appreciation. I forgot a name for that. You know, it's like you do all these old literatures, and you appreciate, you go through it, and the subtleties of it, and the poetics, and all that. Mm-hmm. Like that. Letters. Yeah, you hardly see it anymore. Before it was a big thing. Now it's kind of like, you know, who does that? But that you could learn from someone like that, because he does appreciate it. Mm. But the only thing, it will improve your character. As I said before, someone whose mind is not improved. Unimproved means he doesn't appreciate He doesn't have philosophy. He doesn't appreciate piety. He doesn't appreciate poetics and relationships. That's someone who doesn't have that is unimproved. So before, these were studied because they improved the mind. So Selma was improved, so he could do things better. But the most important thing is knowledge of the Supreme Soul. Right? And a way, and logical thinking. Right? So then, Does that make sense? So we can see as things are kind of a little upside down. Yes.
So the studies always continues, never stops.
Never stops. It's just a matter which is prominent. Like for a brahmachari, he studies half the day and does service half the day. But for someone who's graduated, there'll probably be more time spent in service and less time in study. The study is always going on. Because the point is you've heard, then you have to contemplate and apply it. And as you apply it, what worked, then you see how that worked. And what didn't work, you'll contemplate why didn't it work. So you have to go back to what you've heard. So study is constant. Contemplation is constant. If one just does, it becomes old. And then even whatever the skill is, because now it's trades and professions, you'll be surpassed by someone else who is thinking. Like that. So that's the thing, you want you to think out of the box. Thinking out of the box in the Vedic is just called contemplation. You just take what you've heard, contemplate it, try to apply it in the situation. Because if it doesn't apply, it doesn't matter how far out of the box it is. If it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're trying to do, you know, how you say, corporate takeovers, but you know, thinking out of the box is, you know, about you know, let's say Moroccan musk. You know, like that. You know, you can buy it in the market there, that little guy with the little fez hat on, you know, next to the shop that sells the hookahs and all the things like that. You can think about that. That's out of the box, you know. Nobody in corporate takeovers is thinking about that, so that's really out of the box. You know? But that doesn't matter because it doesn't apply. So thinking out of the box simply means that you don't fall in a rut. You're not just copying something. You're taking it and thinking, why does it work? And how does it work? And how do I improve the application? So, you know, it sounds great thinking out of the box, but it's just a term. But the Vedic science is called manana. So that's what you have to do. So you have to constantly be in the association of those that you can do that. So in other words, by these learned Brahmins, then that will naturally be there, because so many new ways of looking at things will come up. Otherwise, the situations are changing, but you'll try to apply the same thing each time. But the situation changes, so that means the application has to change every time. This is the problem that devotees find with the Vedic culture. They'll say it's ritualistic, but it's not actually. Rituals are there just to form a basis. The actual culture is for the person who's practiced at that, where that's not where his focus is. His focus is on applying the principles to the situation. So the ritualistic side is for the ones that actually don't understand what the Vedic culture is for. But at least they're part of the scene. They don't create a disturbance like that. But for that, the smart, he's not understood. But the same point is the person who doesn't regard them, then he'll miss so much. Yes.
Is it also that the Western culture has a tendency to put everything in boxes, and that actually is ritualistic?
Yeah. No, it is. It's always means, why would you notice something's ritualistic unless you're ritualistic yourself? Right? How many temples have you been at? They come up and throw the water on your head after the arti from behind.
Several.
Yeah. Who started that? Have you ever seen it in India? No. So where did it come from? Western devotees created it. So you can't establish this one throwing it from the front. But that one's established. It won't go away. Taking the flower and coming up to the new bhakta. He doesn't know diddly. Right? He'll come up, take the flower, touch it to your head, and then stick it in your nose. Right? But now, and when does he put it in your nose?
When you're singing.
When you're singing, when you're breathing out, so there's no possibility of smelling it. And every last one of them does it. Why? Because it's a Western ritual established by Westerners that makes sense to them. They're so much more ritualistic.
saying?
I mean, devotees saying not ritualistic, that's only because, you know, from the 50s on, then ritual was lost. But before, basically, World War I, World War II, the West was so ritualistic. Mm. So ritualistic. You know, where does it come from? You know? I mean, folks, if you have something, but they always have the little thing, how they come in the horse, or how they get off the horse, or how they get on the horse, or who helps them up on the horse, or how they help them up on the horse. It's a whole thing. You know, to learn to be a waiter, right? To wait in like the high-class restaurants and stuff like that. It's a 4-year course. 4 years. So, ritual? You know, how do you deal with your wine? You get that funny glass that's big like that. How do you hold it? You have to put your fingers under it. It warms it, you know, like this, and then the bouquet, and the whole thing, and all these kind of things like that. You know, where does that come from? This is ritual. Yeah. The West, I mean, so why would the Westerners say the Vedic is ritual unless they were ritual? Like, South Americans don't say it's ritualistic. Do they? No. You know, there's some to do. Okay, we do it. Europeans complain about it's ritualistic. Why? They're more ritualistic than anybody. You only notice something you have. You don't notice something you don't have. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter, is it in its purified state or not? So it's fine if it's in its proper state, and therefore you notice it. Like somebody has a good aesthetic sense, so they can notice someone who has a bad one. Does that make sense? No, science of government, science, dialectics, and knowledge of the Supreme Soul. You have to balance those.
It means that first they learn this, and after that they push the courses from experts in their own field and study from them.
Yeah, of course.
That's important. Something things.
It depends. In the school, no, because the first thing is you have to know the scriptures without a specific, without a a specialization. You have to learn character is the first thing. The ashram duties are the first. Then the Vedic literatures, the 14 books. Then after that, then is specialization in occupation, and then arts. So that's the four sections. So they would learn, means in other words, any gurukul is going to teach you the first two. Whether you'll get the third and the fourth, then that would depend upon the teacher. But even they teach all that nice, but then they'll graduate and then they'll go back to the kingdom. So then they'll study under the Rajguru and the Prime Minister, and then all the different ministers will teach them those different areas. Right? You know, how to manage the army, how to manage the treasury, how to different all these different things. So then they'll see the practical. Because they've learned all the Shastra. Now they learn the practical. Right? So for the Brahmins, they've learned the Shastra. But that environment in which they've learned it is the practical. So you don't require a separate study. But like for Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, after they've learned all the Shastra, then they learn the different specific things. And then even trades and professions, they're going to learn about horses from the guy who takes care of the horses. Right? It's not a big Brahmin or a big this or, you know, has it. And he's just going to go to the guy who takes care of his stables. He'll learn about the horses. Right? Hmm? Is that okay. Yeah. Like Vikramaditya, that would one thing he'd do, because six months he was sitting on the throne and 6 months he was out in the forest. So during those 6 months, you go out and learn trades and professions and study and all this. Because he had a benediction, he could rule for 1,000 years. But then he made the point to the demigods, it's what's the use of ruling if you don't have your assistant, your prime minister. So they gave the benediction that his prime minister would rule for 1,000 years, would be with him to rule for 1,000 years. So they made a deal, okay, I'll sit on the throne and rule for 6 months, and then you do it for 6 months. So that way they got 2,000 years out of it. Like, you know, so that means for basically 500 years, he just studied and learned new things. So he'd go around and learn trades, professions, you know, so many things they would do. Okay, avoiding vice. Day and night, he must strenuously exert himself to conquer the senses. Right, because we generally think of kings, they just sit back and enjoy themselves and all that. That's what right? You know, the guys in the temple who, you know, like to lift the weights and, you know, like that. And, you know, if anybody comes to the Sunday feast, creates trouble, they throw them out. They're the Kshatriyas, you know, but the other guys, you know, the ladies, you know, enjoy themselves, all that. But somehow or another, the first verse says day and night. Not just in the day, not in the night. No, day and night. He must strenuously exert himself to conquer his senses. It doesn't say he must conquer, he must control his senses. Day and night, he must control his senses. He must strenuously, right, exert himself. Means that he's not just, it happened. No, he's making the effort strenuously, day and night. Right? For he alone, who has conquered his own senses, can keep his subjects in obedience. Right? If you're not obedient, you can't keep your subjects obedient. Yes.
You gave the example of Ravana. And those beings, sometimes it's said that he was so expert in everything except for being a person in the
world. Yes.
Was also following that?
Yeah, of course. Mandodari, his wife, is one of the five big chaste ladies. The point is you don't hear that Ravana's 10,000 wives were unhappy. So is that expert, or would that be expert? Or possibly expert? Maybe expert. Very expert. So that means they work very hard. They know what they're doing. So let us venture out a little bit. Okay, now if a man is not controlling his senses, then who's in the more powerful position, the man or the woman? Yeah, so that means the woman can control him. Now, a man who is not controlling his senses, is he very attractive? No. You know? So therefore, he doesn't control his senses. Does he get any sense gratification? No. Yeah, very little. Minimal. Right? Yeah. You know, just enough to keep some inspiration, because at least some energetic display is better than nothing, right? Okay. So, but therefore, this idea that the guy who's, that's what I said before, one who's voluptuous, he can't rule. Right? So one who's controlling the senses, that's the point, because women are senses. So if someone's controlling the senses, that's attractive. Does that make sense? Because you can feel protected if the senses are controlled. Otherwise, if the senses aren't controlled, your senses, what does the uncontrolled person want to do with senses? Exploit, right? So the woman, no woman feels comfortable with a man who's not controlled in the senses. Right? Does that make sense? So that this idea that the kings just, you know, they have more facility, but at the same time is that they have much more restrictions that they have to follow to make that facility work. You have very little facility, you have very little restrictions, right? Does that make sense? Like we saw before, you know, how much is there, you know, dealing with so many things with the grihastha. So the vanaprastha sannyasi, both of them are fit into one chapter, right? Why is that? Because there's very little facility, so there's very little control. Grihastha, there's more facility, there's more control. Right? And so if grihasthas, then your kshatriyas have the most facility, so that means the most control. Okay. For he alone has conquered his own senses, can keep his subjects in obedience. Let him carefully shun the 10 vices springing from love of pleasure, and the 8 proceeding from wrath, which all end in misery. Right? So therefore there's 18 kinds of vices that he has to avoid. And that means strenuously exert himself. Right? For a king who is attached to the vices springing from love of pleasure loses his wealth and his virtue, but he who is given to those arising from anger loses even his life. Right? So in other words, he'll lose all his wealth and virtue. He'll still be alive, but nobody will care about him. He'll be some schmo somewhere, right? You know, like that. Or if he, from the other 8, then, you know, he'll end up dead, right? Like that. Okay, so here we go. The 10. Hunting, gambling, sleeping by day, censoriousness means highly critical attitude. Excess with women, drunkenness, an inordinate love for dancing, singing, and music, and useless travel are the tenfold set of vices springing from love of pleasure. Nice. Right? Sound?
Yeah, it sounds like that, Western world.
That's Western culture right there. That's it.
Yeah, what else is there?
No, but that's what you do for pleasure. And then the other one is what you do for you know, how you say? Yeah, wait, the tale-bearing means rumor-mongering or being an informant. Violence, treachery, envy, slandering, unjust seizure of property, reviling or insulting others, and assault are the eightfold set of vices produced by wrath. You know, for some people, that's an occupation. That greediness which all men declare to be the root, even of both, these sets, that greediness which all wise men declare to be the root of even both these sets, let him carefully conquer, right? Greediness is what gives rise to both sets. Mm. Okay. Drinking, so now he's going to give what's the most out of all, means you have 10 in one, 8 in the other. So just so you can focus, so you don't get the wrong thing, is that, okay, we got to really work on this dancing thing, you know? You know? So then they give what's the essential points, right? Drinking, dice, women, and hunting, these four which have been enumerated in succession, he must know to be the most pernicious, causing the greatest harm, in the set that springs from love of pleasure. Notice anything about those four? It's the four regulative principles. Right. Here's another place where, you know, so Prabhupada talks about this right here. Mm-hmm. He'll say, oh, Prabhupada just made these up, or like him and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and that. No, all these things just right here. Manu says it right there. Drinking, dice, women, and hunting give rise to intoxication, gambling, illicit sex, and meat eating. Or seen in relation to the five great sins. Drinking means intoxication and forbidden food. Dice is stealing. Women relates to defiling the guru's bed and hunting for violence. Yes.
I've heard some Vaishnavas commentate that, in fact, the Pandavas and even Lord Ramchandra were known to have eaten meat.
Yes, but what does that mean? They went down to... They drove up on their chariot, you know, pushed the little red button and said, I'll take a Big Mac double cheese, a side of fries, and a chocolate milkshake. And then drove around to the front, you know, picked it up and paid their money, right? Is that what they're meaning? So what does it mean? You know what I'm saying? Now we've read through here the scripture. And it's already dealt with that. So what does that mean? In that chapter, what it was talking about, the offer means about your, about meat eating, what did it explain?
Offering sacrifice.
Yeah, always in sacrifice. I mean, we didn't get into it. It means what animals you could use. But if you want, we can go back. Like that. I think the guy's armadillo could be eaten. Like that. Porcupine. But chickens can't be eaten. Right? Because they grow up in the village. They just scratch around in the dirt. Pigs, the local village pig. A wild boar, maybe. You know, so Asterisk is doing okay. But, you know
what I'm saying? That's where the wild ones in the forest.
Yeah, yeah. So the Gauls had it down. Right? You know, like that. They didn't eat the regular pigs. Right? Like that. So you can't eat the village pig. You can't eat cows. Like that. So that means it was only animals that could be offered in sacrifice, and they had to be, and it's not you buy a slaughterhouse, you have to go out and kill them yourself. Right? They're offered in sacrifice, and means the sacrifice means you don't just go, you know, Om Vishnu, Om Vishnu, Om Vishnu, like that, you know. It's a matter, there's a ritual there, and then that soul is elevated to the heavenly planets. And so that means whatever karma was between being a wild boar and going to the heavenly planets, all that karma you get. And not only that, in next lifetime, you know, you get to be the wild boar and he's the nice king going out and shooting you. Right? So in other words, the sacrifice is followed. So they were only according to that. So this thing, oh well, they eat meat, so I can eat meat. Yeah, go out and shoot your own wild boar. Go ahead and then offer the sacrifice. We don't mind. Like that. But the point is That's not what they're doing. They say, oh, they eat meat, so therefore I can, you know, eat my, you know, hayake mutton biryani, you know, like that. No, that's not how it works. It's sacrifice. But the point is there's still reaction. Now, that would be for your average king. Now, the Pandavas and Lord Ramachandra, what's, you know, one common ground between them? Yeah, he's Vishnu Tattva, and the others are pure devotees. So that means any animal they kill is liberated. So they're also doing benefit there, but they'll still only do it according to the rules. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So the problem is not meat eating. The problem is that it's not meat eating is not according to the rules. But the rules that are followed, no person nowadays could follow. Right? And not only that, even you could follow them, Manu himself recommends that you don't do it, because still there's reactions. So anybody who is serious about spiritual life wouldn't want to get entangled in the reactions. So therefore, that's why it's not done. And being devotees of Vishnu means he doesn't accept it. Right? So therefore, then, you know, it means we only accept prasad from Krishna. So therefore, why would we eat it? Does that make sense? So we have this, no, it's bad on its own. No, it's bad because Krishna's not into it. And even if you follow the Vedic things, it's so technical. It just means you got to go out and catch it yourself. So it's not like, you know, every night was, you know, meat and potatoes. Like that. You know, probably most of the time they were vegetarian, because unless you went out and, you know, there was a sacrifice or something, there wouldn't be anything like that. And by eating it, you get the karma of the animal. Because if you eat it just for yourself, then there's sin. Then there's reaction, you go to hell and all these different things like that. So, you know, it doesn't match up. They try to say these things and see, we can do it. No, that's not the point. The point is they're following the laws very strictly.
Yes. So what is the relationship between intoxication and forbidden foods? It says it many means intoxication and forbidden foods. Usually forbidden foods are being...
They go together, because it means, you'll see later when it gives eating forbidden foodstuffs is as good as intoxication. Because it gives the same reaction. It means, what does intoxication do? Right? Yeah, it stirs the body, it creates... What happens with forbidden food? It does the same thing. So the reaction is the same. Though, we deal with it, no meat eating, no intoxication. But the point is when you translate it into the sins, then it doesn't mention no meat eating in the five big... what do you call it? Because killing a cow is equal to killing a Brahmin, right? And eating forbidden food is equal to intoxication. So all it's done is shown that these things come into the five big main sins. So from both sides, both from this section of Manu and from that section of Manu, then these things are not recommended. Right? It was just, you know, give some support, because, I mean, or let's say, show the evidence and why, you know, Prabhupada and the Acharyas take this line. So it's not just, well, they made it up. Because some will try to say that. Because they'll say, well, the scriptures says you can do these things. Yeah, you can do those things. But there's still a reaction for it. You know? Does that make sense? Okay, and now enumerating succession. So that means drinking, dice, women, and hunting. These ones in this order is going to create the most problem. Because someone who's into drinking, they can't do anything. The drunkard can't function in any capacity, right? A gambler also. They're so absorbed, right? Then women, then that'll be a great distraction, but they can still, you know, you get them fired up enough, then they can do something, right? Hunting, then it'll be the opposite. There'll be that harshness on that side, but then... Does that make sense? So it'll be soft on one side, hard on the other, and the other one will be hard on one side, soft on the other. So it gets a little bit less. Doing bodily injury, reviling, and the seizure of property, these three he must know to be the most pernicious and the set produced by wrath. Right? So in other words, bodily injury, criticizing others, and seizing their property. These are the three out of eight that were worst. Right? Okay, and these are also in the five categories of sin. Bodily injury means killing a Brahmin. Reviling means it's also the same as killing a Brahmin. You insult them, and seize your property, stealing the Brahmin's gold. So if it's not a Brahmin, then the reaction's less. It goes down as it goes. But those five main categories is where everything springs from. All the improper activity springs from. Yes.
Violence and assault, where is the precise difference?
Okay.
748.
Okay. Tail bearing. Violence.
And then assault.
Violence can be just not proper dealings, proper performance of the things, not understanding the philosophy, or being violent in behavior. But bodily assault means you actually physically harm them. Okay. A self-controlled king should know that in this set of seven, which prevails everywhere, so the seven means the four of love and the three from, so seven out of the 18. Each earlier named vice is more abominable than those named later. Okay, so that's where it starts. So then it'll come down as drinking will be first, then dice, then women, then hunting, then bodily injuring, then criticizing, and then seizing the property. Yes.
So,
because if you seize the property, you can give it back. But if you've already, cut the guy's head off, hard to put it back. Got a good tailor. Yeah.
So it seems we have a kind of upside down, because amongst the devotees there's the general idea that meeting seems worse than intoxication, for example.
Because it means if you're a hippie, which is worse? Right? In other words, illicit sex and intoxication are spiritual. Yeah, like that. But meat eating, that's just, you don't get, that's just, that's vile. Yeah, that's nasty. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's all. It's our own conditioning makes it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It seems there is some sense in any way, because like you mentioned that Prabhupada, when some said, so many people went away, he mentioned they didn't start eating meat.
Yes. But that's also, it's not that they went back to this smarter lifestyle where they were sacrificing animals according to Vedic rules and all that. they just went. It means not that many people went back to McDonald's. Does that make sense? Because that just means the senses are so out of control, you don't mind killing others, or that they're killed for your sense gratification. That's the difficulty there. So that's why it's austerity is the one that's lost there. So then the problem comes of prescribed duties. And for those meat-eater cultures, prescribed duties is always a big thing. Why do we have to do, why are we restricted, why do we have to follow? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Right? The illicit sex, then that's cleanliness. So cleanliness is a big issue. Right? Cleanliness is the big thing. That's fanatic, but illicit sex, that's not so good. But if it's common people, it's okay. If it's leadership, then that's really bad. You know what I'm saying? So you can just see as our conditioning brings out what's more or less bad. I mean, so it'll be generic. Just being neophyte will bring out, certain things. But you'll see, depending upon the cultural background, that certain things are considered worse or certain things less.
What is the element in the intoxication and forbidden foods that make it so much worse than the others?
Because then you can't function. If you're intoxicated, how do you function? You know what I'm saying? The point is excess with women it's not going to happen while he's performing his duties. It's going to be happening in his free time. So it's going to make his duties not go as well, because if his senses are controlled, then he's not going to be able to keep his subjects in obedience. But he will be able to sit on the throne and do certain things. But if you're intoxicated, if you're sitting on the throne, it doesn't matter. Yeah? You understand? It doesn't work. But gambling, you'll always be thinking of that. So they're just too over, you know what I'm saying? They're too intoxicated. Yes.
There was a Danish minister 40, 50 years ago. He was drunk and he signed off like billions of dollars worth of oil to the Norwegians. Like they could have like a piece of water and that was actually Danish, and he just signed it off to the Norwegians. You can have that. And it was known that it was like billions worth of oil. Now every Norwegian person is a millionaire. Not every Danish person is.
Yes. So that's why intoxication is not so good. Right? That's your point.
That's my point.
Yeah, yeah. The Poles, I was looking at an old map. The Polish kingdom was huge. It was way bigger than France or Germany or Italy or that. You know, if you take what was even the Romans at the time, Poles had that much. Because they had Poland, you know, part of the Czech, part of, you know, over there, up into, you know, Ukraine, I think, was all theirs. And then up into, what's the one on the bottom? Lithuania? You have Lithuania. They even extended beyond that. But then they got so enthusiastic, they would party so much, they were so drunk, that everybody just slowly took it all back. Not that they lost it, you know, like in a war, just they took it back. They were too drunk to notice. You know, so. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's why intoxication is not so... not recommended. Okay. On a comparison between vice and death, vice is declared to be more pernicious, right? It's worse. A vicious man sinks to the nethermost hell. He who dies free from vice ascends to heaven. Right? So, in other words, if one has all bad character, death is actually less of a problem, because the good man at death, you know, is elevated, but the person who's sinful at death, then he's degraded. Therefore, a king has to be very careful about vice. But we have to remember is that everything what he's studying is based on logic and philosophy and Vedanta, right? So then, it's not that vice, you know, morality, ethics takes more of a prominence, right? It's only its prominence is that, one, it gets in the way of self-realization. So that's why it's avoided. And two, it gets in the way of governance, right? Because Arthashastra, the art is in the place of the pranamoy. So that's what do you call it? Economics, morality, and justice. So that won't function properly if vice is there, right? And dharma is not going to perform nicely. Okay, establishment. Yes.
That's why we can see that violent magicians, especially on high ranks, they go naked first.
Politicians, yeah, can be, because also depending on how much tax you take is how much sin you take from the people. That's why standard tax was 1/6, which is like, I think, 16.5%. That's standard. And then if there's emergency, you can take up to 25%. But like you're saying, some governments take 50%, I think America 40% on really high level like that. So that means that they're getting more reactions, right? And you see that they get a lot. And then the fun part is they take sometimes an over proportionate amount out of gambling and intoxication. Because alcohol doesn't cost very much. You take some potatoes, stick them somewhere, and they go rotten. That's not like high intensity, you know, work. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So the thing is the taxes are so great. So the government's getting a huge amount from these, you know, from liquor and from how you say, cigarettes, and tobacco, and from casinos. They get huge, huge amounts of money. So then that will then mean the proportion of sin that they're taking on is even greater than that amount of that. Plus, it said if you don't protect the people, you get 100% anyway. You know, so they don't do so well. No, it's very few. I think only the peanut farmer. Afterwards, he went back to his peanut farming and went on fine. Everybody else, you know, they get, you know, all kinds of weirdo stuff and disappear. Carter.
Oh.
Yeah, you never heard of him. Came and went.
Yeah.
You know, he's, you know, simple, straightforward guy. So he survived somehow, where most others don't.
He was the most spiritual.
He was the most spiritual. Oh, okay.
He complained that the Americans were becoming too materialistic.
Okay.
And then he was replaced by a Reagan who said we should be more mature.
And look what happened to him.
That's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't do that. Yeah. Yes.
So if the government, if they don't protect, they take 100% of the,
yes,
of the action. Why, yeah, is it that there's still a lot of sinful reaction among the citizens, because it seems another government...
No. It's not that they're not how you say, prosperous in their production of sin. You know, so there's plenty to go around. Don't worry. You know, there's always more and more. There's enough for everybody. You don't have to worry. Okay. So now, establishment. Let him appoint 7 or 8 ministers whose ancestors have been royal servants, who are versed in the sciences, heroes skilled in the use of weapons, and descended from noble families and who have been tried. Tried here doesn't mean in a court of law. Tried means that you've seen you've seen them in action, so you know that they've been tested.
Right? Proven themselves.
Tested, reliable, and approving themselves, right? Yeah. So here, 7 or 8 ministers. Like, I think the maximum you want is 9. You don't want any more than that. Because more than 9, you can't actually run a very tight governance. Like that. I mean, it's on the top. There are committees below this. Then you can have many, many more. It's how big the kingdom is how big it is. It means every village has a head. 10 villages, there's a head of 10 villages. Right? Then you have 10 of those heads, then there's 1 head of them. So depending how big your kingdom is, it'll go up so many levels and there'll be so many people. So then you have those committees, you know, that council. But it doesn't run the country. It simply represents the people like that. Even an undertaking easy in itself is sometimes hard to be accomplished by a single man. How much harder it is for a king, especially if he has no assistant, to govern a kingdom which yields great revenues. Right? So assistant means ministers and everybody else. Right? It doesn't mean one person. Right? It means you have the prime minister, but the prime minister has all the other ministers.
Yeah.
Parliament means you get from these things. In other words, you have these different bodies that deal with different aspects. And you have ministers, and you have the head, and you have the cabinet, and you have all these different things. So they're all derivatives of the Vedic concept, but they're somehow or another not as scientific as they could be. Okay? You know what I'm saying? Because the whole point here is that people with character are running the government. So you don't have to have one department checking the other to make sure they don't get out of hand. You know what I'm saying? That's what your modern democracies do, is they have a system that one checks the other to make sure. So, you know, some of them are, I say, more efficiently designed. So they check each other, but they don't get in each other's way, you know, at least minimally. But some of them, they check each other by getting each other's way that nothing can be done. So at least you don't end up with a, you know, an autocrat. You know, that's the idea. Does that make sense? How do they prevent? No, bureaucracy you have to have, but you don't have any bureaucracy on the top. It's always leadership on the top. Bureaucracy you need, because you always have papers and files. You have to have bureaucracy. Like that. but it has its place. It's as an assistant for leadership. It can never replace leadership. You know, only a bureaucrat could think that it could. Yeah, but no leader in any sphere of the world would think that they can replace. Okay, so they're saying for a single man, some undertakings, though not very difficult, is hard to do alone. So let alone a whole kingdom. Right? Let him daily consider with them, means those ministers, the ordinary business, right, means ordinary for a kingdom. Not ordinary, so. You know, so should we get the apple juice or the orange juice? You know, like that. And, yeah. Do we get the, you know, freshly squeezed, or can we use the concentrate all right? You know, yeah, no, they don't worry about that. They get some bureaucrat to do that. Okay. Let it consider with them the ordinary business, referring to peace and war. The four subjects called sthana, the revenue, the manner of protecting himself and his kingdom, and the sanctification of his gains by pious gifts. So that's ordinary business. Sthana, that will come up later. Four subjects called sthana. I'm not sure if that is not the, what do you call it? Samadana Veda Danda. Like that, or if that has enough, that didn't mean anything either. Okay. Sama is speaking nicely, and see if you get done what you want there. Dana is you give something and make friends like that, and then get what you want to get done. Beta is you propose consequences. You know, in other words, it's good for their health. Otherwise, then you know, like that. And then danda is, you know, yeah, you affect what you told them wouldn't be so good for them.
So they can realize it.
Yeah, so they can, yeah, directly realize. So it might mean that, or it might be some other, because it says four subjects. We'll see, it'll go on, it'll explain all these. But here it's just giving the overview. In other words, he has to pick ministers, they have to be of good character, and there's no question he can't have ministers, you have to have ministers. And so then, and they should discuss the ordinary business of the kingdom, which is peace and war, sthana, the revenue, protecting himself in the kingdom, and the sanctification of his gains by pious gifts. So they always have to be doing charitable work. As a government, they have to be doing charitable work. Having first ascertained the opinion of each minister separately, and then the views of all together, let him do what is most beneficial for him in his affairs. You never go cold into a meeting with a new topic. You always discuss with each minister separately, privately, so you know what they feel and they give their input, because they're trusted people. They're qualified people. So they'll give an idea, so that after talking with all eight, then you'll be able to put together, because in a meeting, not everybody can talk nicely. So this idea is, oh, we'll have a meeting and work it out. No, you won't work it out. You have to discuss with everyone first. Then once you understand what it is, and then you've pulled it together into one thing that matches what everybody's bringing out, then you can present it in the meeting, and then, based on that, they'll refine it and make it into something practical that they can all get behind. You understand? Because having the discussion and coming to a resolution doesn't mean everybody's behind it. It just means that you had a discussion, and those who are willing to discuss it or vote on it voted, and you ended up with some. But it doesn't mean anybody gets it done. I don't have to give any examples. Right? So then the point is no, that you've discussed with them before so that they feel part of that thing. It's not a matter of this is not niti, that it's a trick. This is the nature of how it goes. They're the responsible people. So unless they feel that whatever they feel about it is expressed, and that, so the king then can be the what do you call it? The convener, not the convener. The chairman. So then he'll see that, well, he had this feeling, he felt that this would be there, and someone else would say, that's true, they would support, or no, but there's this other consideration he didn't consider. Mm-hmm. Right? And so then he will be, okay, now he's more on board there, or everybody else. So it'll work out. So that's the whole point.
It also prevents riots during those meetings?
Yeah, but generally with these kind of persons, you know, noble families and that, there won't be any riots like that. So you won't have somebody take off the shoe and bang it on the table. No, that won't happen.
like that. Like that. That would be one advantage to karams. You could really whack it on the tail. Or a boot, you know, nice big, you know, some big black golf boot, you know, you could really...
Padukas would also be good.
Who?
The padukas, the wooden shoes.
Yeah. You know, Crocs wouldn't do anything.
No,
they wouldn't make any sense. The guy next to you wouldn't even know it, you know. Yeah, wouldn't do anything. Okay. With the most distinguished among them all, a learned Brahmin, let the king deliberate on the most important affairs which relate to the six measures of royal policy. Right? So amongst all his ministers, one is the prime minister. He's the most distinguished, most qualified. So really important things he'll discuss with him. Getting an idea from him there, then that will be your discussions with your other ministers, and then finally your meeting. Right? So that means he's discussing with the prime minister, then with all the ministers, then in the full meeting.
Yes. Ministers are always
wrong. That's the standard thing. But if somebody is very, very qualified, he might not be. You know, he might be a Kshatriya, he might be... Vidura was a Shudra.
Because it says heroes skilled in the use of weapons.
Heroes skilled in the use of weapons. So, but it just means that they... It doesn't mean that they don't know their stuff. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like there's you know, you have the guy that goes down and teaches the police or teaches, you know, that special ops branch of the government how to use certain techniques. Much of the time they're Brahmins. It's just they're smart enough to work these things out. So, because the point is, if you're a minister and you're not skilled in weaponry, if someone tries to come and kill you, then, you know, right there would minister less. You know, you have to be able to give it a fighting chance. But misuse of weapons nowadays, you know, an Uzi will work. You know, that's not that you have to be good in the sword. You know.
It's a tough problem.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about a government. He means he has other Brahmins who will just be Shastric, or ones who just deal with the rituals for the kings. Like that, they may not be skilled in weaponry. You know, like for the Kurus, their Brahmins were. So Drona and Kripa, they would do all the samskaras and the weddings and all these, but at the same time they knew weaponry. But it's not necessarily that that's there. And it also can mean, so that's in this later ages. If you go back in earlier ages, you know, you have Vishishtha or Vishwamitra. It's like they don't get out a sword and that. They just chant a mantra on a blade of grass and throw it at you, and you turn into a little pile of dust, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? So they knew their weapons, but they knew the weapons according to the Brahmins, not according to Kshatriyas. Right? Like that. So as you go back in ages, they would know like that. And as you come down this way, then they have to, you know, be pretty good with the sword or with the gun or with something, you know. Yeah. An aluminum baseball bat. You know. Yes.
Modern day ministers, they are in the center predominantly what? Brahmanas, Kshatriyas?
You have to just see what their mood is. See, it's because they could be Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, but, you know, but it's not necessarily that they're a standard, they could be a follower. Right, or they're just bureaucrats who are very good at it and very good orate talkers. Another one, so they're good. They're good in the art of they call it rhetoric, right?
Sophistry.
Yeah, like this. So then they can do well, like that. So you have to see. But generally, because of the formality of it, when it gets right up to the formality of it and this and that, then generally there's the Brahminical or Kshatriya element. But it doesn't mean that it's in its pure state. You know, because the formalities that they have to deal with, the machinery is so bulky, you know, to be able to tolerate going through everything to get anything done. They would have to have, you know, some fairly good samskaras to be able to work within it. You know, like that. But it's not that they're innate. How you say? Yes, family. Yeah. Okay, Vriti. A latter verse delineates the six measures of royal policy as follows. So that, yeah. Let him constantly think of the six measures of royal policy. Guna.
namely alliance, war, marching, halting, dividing the army, and seeking protection. So then it'll define all those, how to decide what to do. So these are the six. So that's what he discusses with the prime minister. Right? And then once that's decided, then he may discuss with the other ministers. But if someone's, you know, minister of economics, it's not so important for him to be involved in how he's going to use his armies. So that's the prime minister. Right? Let him, full of confidence, always entrust to that official all business. Having taken his final resolution with him, let him afterwards begin to act. Right? So he'll discuss with him, they'll have their meetings, he'll discuss with him again. So in other words, to get a concept, he'll discuss with the prime minister. Before action, he'll discuss with the prime minister. Yes.
Is there like a general of the army, like one specific individual?
Yeah. No, there's always the general of the army.
He's part of the king's.
He generally would be part of the ministry.
Yeah.
You know, or if not, he would be called in for that. It means if all of them are Brahmins, then he would just be under the Brahmin. Mm-hmm. So that would mean the Brahmin would be the one with the strategy. And then the general will be the one who would get it done.
Okay.
Because you do have, you know, you do have these things of the person who does the strategy doesn't fight at all. You know? You see that. I mean, that was, you know, because he can see, okay, what's the weather, what's the men, what's the political, what's this and that, therefore you could use these things. And the generals know how to practically do that. So the generals actually do it. You know, but the point is there's no problem with a general or kshatriya working under the advice of a Brahmin, because he's not hired, he doesn't have to do it. You know, but he knows it's better, so he does do it. So he's not his. He's not hired by him. Like that. Does that make sense? So it'd be, you know. Does that make sense? Like Sun Tzu, from what I know, he was never a king. You know. Like that, or Machiavelli was never a king. You know, they were a strong family, but they were never a king. You know, or Musashi, you know, he wasn't a king. You know, but he knew the science, and then others can gain from it. So the strategy is there. Is that work? Yeah. Okay. He must also appoint other officials, men of integrity, who are wise, firm, well able to collect money, and well tried. Right? Because things in the government cost money, so if they can't raise the money, how are they going to take care of their portfolios? Right? So that's the natural. Right? Well tried means they're experienced. You know what they can do. It's not just some new kid because he talks loud or stuff like that.
And they won't steal money.
Yeah. Okay, as many persons as the due performance of his business requires, so many skillful and clever men, free from sloth, let him appoint. Right, so they must be active persons. You know, in other words, they'll do it themselves. You know, in other words, you get sent information on the internet, you know. You do something directly. Does that make sense? That's the thing. So free from sloth. So that's the point. So, in other words, he has his ministers, then you have so many portfolios that have to be taken care of. The bigger the kingdom, so in other words, the greater the business, the greater number of officials he has to have. Right? So this is where you start getting into people, you know, they're expert in the field, or they're good bureaucrats in the field, something like that. Among them, let him employ the brave, the skillful, the high-born, and the honest in offices of the collection of revenue, in mines, manufactures, and storehouses, but the timid in the interior of his palace. Right? So the brave, the skillful, and the high-born, anything to do with money, you know, money and stuff, because that's, you have to, you know, unless they're high-born, unless they're good character, unless they're bold, and brave, because so many people try to cheat, so he has to be very brave to keep them in control. But the more timid and all that, they'll work within the palace. Because inside the palace, there's also great amounts of stuff. Right? Because you have your treasuries in there, you have the, you know, all the different staff that's in there, you have the family, you know, so like that. Let him also appoint an ambassador who is versed in all sciences, who understands hints, expressions of the face and gestures, who is honest, skillful, and of a noble family. So the ambassador must know all the sciences, right? Because these other ministers should know all the sciences, like, yeah, versed in the sciences, so they know. But these other officials, they may only know their only area. They know their one science. They know it very well. But the ambassador has to know all, because he has to work with kings and ministers who know all the sciences, right? And who understands hints. So you might say something in a meeting, because you can't just say, well, I think, you know, what they're saying is a bunch of nonsense, and so I don't trust them, so therefore I think we should, you know, work out a policy that's a little bit more airtight, so that, you know, we'll be a little more safe. You can't say that in front of the other party. So you have to say some hint. You say something, or some, you know, something like that, whatever, and he catches that, and he's able to, no, I think, you know, like this, because he'll do all the talking, right? Expressions of the face and gestures. So when they say something, he knows if they're honest or not, what they're meaning and all that. Because every facial, you know, it's called in dance, it's called abhinay. Is that the facial expression where the hand is, it's an emotion. So when somebody's emotion is there, those things go there. So only someone very well practiced can reduce the effect of those, right? It means the ones that work on it the most are like poker players, right? You know, they just sit there and you don't know what they're doing, like that. But that's the whole point, is they can control everything, that any muscle that will go when you do this, it does that, so like that. Who is honest, skillful, and noble. So it's honest, so it means he's going to work according to the Shastra. He's not going to do something for himself. He's skillful, so he's actually able to apply the knowledge, not that he's, you know, just a good talker and that's it. And he's of a noble family. In other words, his character is good. One point of noble family means the character is good. Because even if he's not from a noble family, if his character is good, he's qualified. But if he's from a noble family, his character is not good. But generally speaking, if they're noble family and good character, you know it's going to be steady. You know the family, you know the history of them. They've always been stable in their character. So there's a good chance this minister will be also. Does that make sense? Such an ambassador. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow with the ambassador. So you're discussing the Indian ambassador.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama